Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 in the Good Beer Seal. We're here today, September 4th, 2012, at Roberta's in Bushwick on the Heritage Radio Network. We're sponsored by GreatBrewers.com. Check it out. If you want to learn more about beer styles and where to buy good beer, go to GreatBrewers.com. And we're supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal, an association of 41 New York City bars that serve, promote, and support good beer. Check out GoodBeerSeal.com. We've got some great guests tonight in studio, Chris O'Leary from BrewYorkNewYork.com and Sean McCain, now with the Bronx Brewery. And we'll have a special call-in guest, John Richards, who's putting together the Beer Hunter, the movie, based on videos and other interviews with great Michael Jackson. He'll be in at our second segment. Guys, welcome to the show.
Hey, man. How's it going?
You know, there's nothing like having a beer community, and in New York City, it's really great. I'm really... happy to be part of it in whatever way I can. And Chris, you've got this site, Brew York New York.
It's easier to say after a few beers.
It's a long, there's a lot of letters in there. It's Brew York, New York, spelt out .com.
Yeah, it is. It's just the fact that so many people visit the site just shows how dedicated they are to drinking good beer in New York.
Well, you do a great job. And Sean, you know, for a long time we knew you as the victory rep in New York City, and now you're at with the Bronx Brewery,
a growing small
brewery. So we're going to have a chance to talk to both of you tonight. But let's start with a question. I was in here at the bar, and the manager at Roberta's asked me, he said, I need to get a Pilsner in a can. And is there a beer in New York City that a Pilsner in a can that you might recommend for the guys here at Roberta's?
Well, Mama's Little Pils is always a really good one by Oscar Blues. I know that's one that I drink a lot. And it's good for the beach because obviously it's canned and it's got a lot of good hop flavor to it as well.
What do you think, Chris? Anything?
You know, I've come around on the 6-point crisp, actually. I know that they've been working hard to tweak the recipe a little bit in the past year or so since they released it for the first time, and it's nice, easy drinking, and has the benefit of being in a 16-ounce can, which, those bonus 4 ounces can go a long way.
That's a big thing, man, when you can have one of those tall boys. It tastes so much better.
So both of those, the 6-point crisp and the Oscar Blues, the Mama Pils, were on my list as well.
Oh, yeah. Fancy that, Jimmy.
What do you think? What do you think about American Pilsners? This is where I'm trying to go with this. Is that for a long time I was really particular about my German Pilsners. Mm-hmm. You know, I like the oddballs, Kulmbacher and EKU and Mars and the real specialty German Pilsners. What do you think about American Pilsners?
I think that it takes a really talented brewer to make a truly good Pilsner. There's nothing you can really hide behind in a Pilsner. And I was up in Portland, Maine this weekend at a beer festival up there, and there was this little nano brewery up there called Bunker Brewing, and they made a Pilsner as their first beer.
Oh, yeah.
And it was incredibly good.
Really?
It was, they wanted to show that they do have brewing talent and not go with the typical IPA or you know, pale ale as your first beer, but they went with the Pilsner. It was easy drinking. There were no off flavors in it. It was nice and clean. That is hard to do. And I think that, you know, only now are we getting to the point where, you know, there's a critical mass of brewers that are all able to execute a Pilsner well.
That's pretty good, especially with the name Bunker. You know, you don't want to run for the bunker and get your pill. But, you know, Pennsylvania, the state just south of us, is just chock full of great Pilsners, which actually reminds me of another good canned Pilsner, Sly Fox. Makes the, what's it called, Chris?
The Pikeland.
The Pikeland Pills. Yeah, that's a real good Pilsner as well. But, of course, you have Victory's Prima Pills, Stout's Pills. You know, just go down the line of all those great German-American brewers that really take the time and the dedication to correctly lager their beer and use all of the technology that's out there today to make sure that they're conditioning things correctly, lagering it correctly, using the right hops, making it bright, making it a little bit more American, having a little bit more punch to it, while still retaining some of that the flavor profile of a traditional German Pilsner.
All right. That sounds, I like Victory a lot. I went to a Stout's beer dinner recently in Long Island City at Alibar.
Oh, yeah.
And they really had the full range. We had the Fest. We had the Pils. I haven't had the full range of Stout's beers ever.
Do it.
Until then.
The American Pale Ale is amazing. Hands down the best American Pale Ale out there.
And except for the Bronx Pale Ale. Excuse me? No, it is phenomenal. It's really great. That's a good bottle, too.
It's been served at several White House 4th of July celebrations, too.
I think the flag has something to do with it on the label.
That actually helps quite a bit, yeah.
Well, before we talk about the homebrew at the White House, which just went down.
Oh, yeah.
I want to ask Chris, okay, of the Pennsylvania breweries that I know well, there's Sly Fox, Trogues, Victory, and Stouts.
Yeah.
Which is your favorite brewery?
Oh, I hate superlatives like this. Can I just have them all?
Or is there a favorite from each brewery that you like?
Well, I mean, like, the Prima Pils from Victory has always been, like, my go-to Pilsner when people ask, you know, what's a good American Pilsner? Or it's also a great entry-level beer for people who've never been into craft beer. I love recommending that beer. It, you know, it really stands out as defining the differences between macro and craft. And then, I mean, Trogues Nugget Nectar is always, you know, that when that time of year comes around.
Was that April? Was that when the Nugget Nectar falls off the truck?
Yeah, it's about April. And
they recently came out with a new beer called Perpetual IPA.
Oh, yeah.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, that's one of their best beers
absolutely
I've ever had.
Absolutely phenomenal.
And the Troganator for the winter. So I sometimes neglect the Pennsylvania breweries. I used to feel that in New York City, people had an affinity for where they vacationed. Mm-hmm. So if you put a Vermont or a Maine beer on the list, it would fly out. In Pennsylvania, I felt like was a stepchild. But I think Pennsylvania has some great breweries.
They really do. I actually started the Labor Day weekend with the Perpetual IPA. Took it on the train on Metro North, bought it at a beer table pantry.
Just, nice plug. They,
yeah. I just love the convenience of that, to be honest.
Oh, it's the best. It really is the best. Have a good beer, and when you have a nice train ride ahead of you, what a great way to travel. Yeah.
Victory has always had this special, the Braumeister series. They've had some really great stuff.
Absolutely.
And they also, every once in a while, the Braumeisters would sneak in like a Dunkel Lager, and Sly Fox also makes a Dunkel Lager, and that's a style I think is definitely could I would like to see more of. And they're both actually, I think the Dunkel Lager is probably a really great American style coming from those two breweries, Sly Fox and Victory.
Yeah. Let's also not forget Weyerbacher too. Yeah, another Yards great Pennsylvania of Yards. Yeah,
Tom Kehoe. Last time I was here, I was here with Tom Kehoe on
from Yards. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
You can just go across the river and grab some of that.
So there's some cool stuff going on in Pennsylvania, and we're talking about American Pilsners. And then just the other day, there was a big story about the White House is making homebrew, and Garrett Oliver was interviewed by Eric Asimov of the New York Times. So I don't know if that's of interest at all. I mean, so the cooks in the kitchen in the White House are making homebrew, and they're using extract.
Yeah, they're using extract.
Is that interesting at all, or is that just...
Sure. Anytime you're talking about beer and politics, and it's about not having like the round table beer summit, and it's actually about you drinking beer and making beer with a chef involved, I think that is great news.
This might be the first and last time that I've retweeted the press secretary of the president of the United States on Twitter. But
why? Because he was the one who announced
that they had released the recipe. But I'm not surprised that they started with extract. I mean, it's it's the way that many home brewers start.
That's how I started.
Yeah, I think I'm the exception to the rule that I went all grain, and then I've never brewed with extract.
Really?
I know.
You should try it.
Well, yeah, it's easy. To be honest, it would probably make home brewing a heck of a lot easier
for
me.
It does.
But I watched their video that showed the process, because the White House released a video. It's available on YouTube, and you can see, you know, behind the scenes. I wish I had a kitchen like that to home brew in too, because it's quite nice. But I think that it really heightens the awareness of home brewing as a hobby in the United States.
It's phenomenal, you know? Too, right? I mean, imagine Jimmy Carter was the first time that I heard in my life any news coming out of the White House talking about beer, and thank you, Brother Jimmy. But now, I mean, I guess Brother Barack, let's keep it going, man. Yeah. Let's get the word out.
All right. A little bit of chatter to get the show started. It's still in this room with Brew York New York and Sean McCain from Bronx Brewery. It's two of the really cool people from the New York City beer scene. Sean, so now you're at the Bronx Brewery.
Yeah, man.
So I have a special beer.
Really?
It's an oak beer from the winter.
Shut and your mouth. You have one of those?
I have it.
I've never tried it.
So let's taste it on the air. So Bronx Brewery, give us a little background on the Bronx Brewery and what's going on.
Wow.
And in full disclosure,
yeah,
you worked for Victory for a while.
Yeah.
And now you're at a new up-and-coming small brewery.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the Bronx Brewery started with an idea of two best friends in 2009. And They didn't know much about beer, but they knew they sure liked it, and they knew that they would like to bring a brewery to the Bronx area. And then they quickly understood that in order to do that...
Don't you love the sound of those glasses clinking?
I do.
We drink so much beer on this show. It is. That's why we call it Beer Sessions.
Better.
Yeah.
Right. This is open. Why don't you pour it for me, Chris?
Sure. And our first beer, we started with the Bronx, the Rye PA.
The Rye Pale Ale, yeah.
Which is a new beer.
Brand new, limited edition. We just put that out 2 weeks ago, and it has gone like gangbusters. It's still available in the Bronx and Manhattan. That's only where we're selling the beer right now. Yeah, and then the next beer we had was the Bronx Pale Ale, which is our flagship, and that's available year-round. So what we're about to be drinking is the Bronx Pale Ale aged in oak bourbon barrels.
This was actually bottled in December 2011.
It should have the writing on it.
Yeah.
This is
and I brought that from
12,
the cellar
14,
at Jimmy's
11.
Number 43, of which I have a whole case left.
You do not.
Every once in a while, I do hold back things. Yeah, I hold back things. I think that I'm not sure about how beers can age, but I do like to hold back some stronger beers at least 6 months. If I get them in the spring, my gut is I want to save them till at least the fall, and it's September 4th.
You know,
it's the fall.
You got to be careful with that, Jimmy, because there's different styles that age better. I mean, certainly the higher ABV beers, you know, your barley wines, your Belgian quadruples, your Russian imperial stouts, and imperial stouts in general are going to age a lot better. But you have to watch out with IPAs. This isn't an IPA. It's a pale ale, but it's a very hoppy pale ale. And the first thing
so
that's going to
drop.
So
why would they put the effort of just taking their pale ale off the shelf and aging it in oak?
Well, the flavor.
Is this for something fun?
Flavor.
Is it a promotional thing?
This is an explosion of flavoring your mouth.
That's right.
I think it's pretty good.
Well, it really is.
I'm damn proud that I held this for six months.
I am too.
And didn't
because,
touch it till
you know,
now.
I haven't had it. So
tonight we're doing a special cellar release. We have $10 tastings every Tuesday, and there's one keg I've been holding for 6 months, and it's La Rules Grand 10. It's a special triple, which I tried last winter. Yeah,
I listed and that on my site today.
I'll give it 6 months, and I do think that some beers do improve over 6 months. And for me, it's usually if they're too sweet, if there's a lot of sweetness in there, and then they're strong, and they're, mm-hmm. then like they're meant for aging at least 6 months, maybe a year. You know?
Also like that you added, by the way, to that list, the Green Flash Summer Saison tonight. Oh. It's a great way to end. No, not on this. On his $10 tasting tonight. Because it was my pick for a calorie conscious, flavorful beer. Yeah. Yeah.
We always have a nice cellar at Jimmy's number 43, and if anything, half the beers I have, I don't even put on the list.
Dude, this is phenomenal.
I probably need someone like Sean to come and help me figure out. But
I'll be there
directly. Or come to drink them. You know,
Chris, afterwards, we have a job to do.
Let's talk about this. Since we're talking
it's
beer, we're trying to be a little more specific and talk about our beer. So this one, it's oak age, but it has a little hint of vanilla.
Well, that's what you're going to get generally from bourbon, the residual bourbon that's going to sit inside the oak, and the oak itself generally just used once during the bourbon aging process. So you're still going to get a little color from it. You're going to get a little flavor from it. Then surprisingly, and this is the thing that's really a kudos to Damien, the brewmaster at the Bronx Brewery, is that the hops they're still there.
Mm-hmm.
Some 9 months later, it's totally, totally delicious.
And I remember having this back when it was first released, and there's a much more pronounced vanilla on there. It's kind of delicious, you know.
It's balanced. Prior to that, I mean, there's Cascade and Centennial hops just loaded throughout this beer, so that you really want to have that the bright citrus flavor with the dark malt backing of the pale ale. And the sweetness of the vanilla really brings that together. Exactly. Sort of gives a little bit of a harmony now with the age. It's great.
Well, cool. Hey, let's raise our glass to Bronx Brewery.
Yeah,
we'll take a short break. Be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
Cheers.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Brew Seal. We're here with Chris O'Leary from BrewYorkNewYork.com and Sean McCain from the Bronx Brewery. Sean, what did you just say? We're drinking this aged oak barrel
from your
aged
cellar, Jimmy.
Beer.
You already invited me, by the way, to come do some taste testing in your cellar. I'm going to start directly by going to this case. We, as a brewery, have two bottles of this vintage left. Two bottles, and you have 11.
So the message is, send your rare beers to Jimmy's Number 43.
That's right.
We'll keep them in our extensive walk-in cooler.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
for 6 months. I don't know. There's some great guys, Sam Barbieri, Waterfront Ale House, Ed from Mugs. They've been in this business a long time. They're the deans of beers for beer bars to me, and I know that they have a lot of you know, they'll have like a Brooklyn Monster, and they'll have, you know, Sierra Bigfoot.
Ed has, and this was great. So the very first barley wine I ever had in my drinking career was a 2001 Brooklyn Monster. And I went into Mugs.
You can still get it.
Yeah, I went to Mugs like in 2011, and I'm like, oh my God, this is a beer I had, the first barley wine I ever had, 10 years aged now, for like $10 for a 12-ounce bottle. And I'm like, I have to have this.
So I love you, stupid.
There are guys doing this.
I love you, you big crutch.
I know. Right?
And one thing, I don't want to fault anyone, but I do feel like a lot of times we're getting special releases of beers, and we're talking about expensive beers, and often in keg, and you can never taste them until you've cracked the keg. And it's like a beer I'm premiering tonight, the Larule Grand 10. I got it in January. Mm. I tapped the keg, and I was like, oh my God, I wish I'd held this. And it was a little too sweet, and then it tapped it again a few months later, and I luckily had one more keg, and I'm saving it, and it's going on tap tonight.
That's great.
And it's still maybe too young, but this things we have to experiment, we have to put our time in. But the question is the brewer going to hold it back? Is the distributor going to hold it back? Or does it fall on the bar owner?
You know who's not going to hold it back?
Who?
The distributor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The distributor is going to sell that beer, and that's their job, and God bless them, let's let them do that. The brewery, you know who's not going to do that? the brewery as well, because we're making beer so we can get it out. We might.
Well, there's another place in New Haven.
You're doing
there's
the right
a Cask Republic. It's a newish beer bar owned by the guys that own the Ginger Man in Connecticut, and they've made a big point of holding back a lot of beer. So I think that you'll find some select places that will have.
Well, that's why I think it's on the publican.
Yes,
it really is. I mean, it's in a perfect world. If you think about it, brewers are made to brew. We're not vintage. We don't have cellars. Our cellars are made to cellar our beer for 4 to 6 weeks, depending on if we're lagering, maybe 3 months if we're going to do a barley wine. And then we want to get it through that three-tier system as quickly as we can so it can go to the distributor, it can go to Jimmy's 43, and then it can go into the mouth of the waiting public.
And unfortunately, in New York, where space is at a premium,
we're
unfortunately maybe not going to have the opportunity to cellar as much as we'd like to. So.
Right. So that's true. Regionally, it's obviously a little bit different.
It's something to think about. And if you see going to a beer bar or restaurant and there's a vintage list, you might want to consider trying those.
Well, I know the Gate has, like in Brooklyn, like every once in a while Bobby will he'll bring out like a 2007 keg, a half barrel that he's been sitting on since 2007 on it, because he tasted it then. He goes, you know what, 5 years, this is going to be banging.
Well, there's definitely some good beer bar owners in New York. And hey, we've got another guest coming on. It's John Richards. He's making Beer Hunter the movie. John, are you on the air right now?
I am, Jimmy,
How are you? You know, I was lucky enough, we did a New York City Beer book, blog, and video fest in July, and I saw a lot of the excerpts of your Beer Hunter, the movie. We're here with Chris O'Leary and Sean McCain. So tell us what's going on with your movie and, you know, your inspirations for working with Michael Jackson.
Well, right now, in kind of mid-editing phase, you know, I've got 60 hours of footage that I shot with Michael. I'm trying to, you know, we shot it a little bit randomly. I didn't expect, obviously, Michael to be passing away, unfortunately, as soon as he did. And we started doing this project and didn't really have a clear purpose. You know, we're kind of going towards maybe doing another Beer Hunter series and releasing it over the internet because it was so hard to get it onto television. And so I'm trying to go through all this footage and weave it together and make, you know, weave it together so that it makes sense, but I really also want to add more of Michael's story to the footage because he doesn't tell much of his own story, and I think there's so many parts of Michael and so many things that that need to be put together to get a better, an overall clear picture of who he was and how much of an influence he had. So I'm just, you know, trying to get old Beer Hunter television series footage licensed and, I'm collecting interviews from around the United States from brewers. We want to get over to London and up to Yorkshire where he grew up, and then get up to Scotland and see how, you know, he had a huge, obviously, impact in the world of whiskey as well. So lots of pieces we're trying to knit together right now.
So, John, we know, so Michael Jackson, he wrote some great books about beer, and we don't have to compare him to the musician. they say that he saved beer. And I always have this image of him from your movies of him sniffing a glass of beer as if it's a, you know, brandy or something. Tell us about how you met Michael and how you got involved working with him on this project.
You know, it's funny. I had moved back to I'm originally from Schenectady, but lived in Colorado for a long time and came back east for a couple of years and then got asked back out to Colorado to run some coffee shops and started a production company on the side. You know, I was always into photography, and I just loved, I really was interested in video and adding music and moving pictures to the whole thing. And started doing ski movies on the side when I was in Aspen, and a couple of them were seen by the guy that owned the coffee shops. His brother had these at a wine club and a beer club, and he saw a couple of the videos, and he said, I want to hire that guy to do our videos. And at the time, this was in 2003, and they wanted to add, you know, video to the club so people could see where everything came from. And the beer club was Michael Jackson's Rare Beer Club. So in the middle of a trip through the vineyards of Europe, I flew into London in February of 2004 to shoot some video tastings with Michael Jackson, who, you know, I grew up more with Charlie Papazian. You know, we did a lot of homebrewing back in the early 90s, and certainly was familiar with Charlie and somewhat familiar with Michael, but not really familiar. And showed up and you know, the rest was just kind of a crazy ride for the next 2.5 years, going around the world with Michael and filming things. And
sounds like a, you know, we a pretty good life, though.
Start with some tastings, and then we realized, wow, this is Michael's such a icon. We have to get as much footage as we can. So I tried to just hook up with them whenever I could. And
so, do you still have the Kickstarter campaign going?
No, that wrapped up in at the end of January.
Oh, wow. How much did you raise, if I can ask?
We raised, we're shooting for $30,000, and we raised $46,000.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah,
which was fantastic. And, you know, they take a chunk of that, but we got everything kind of rolling again. And, you know, there's still a lot of items out there. We want to try to license some of the Beer Hunter footage. Obviously, that's expensive. But, you know, we got the bulk of the movie done with that, and we're really just trying to wrap it all together with Michael's story. So, yeah, that was a nice little thing. I'd never, you know, I've been trying to raise money for this movie, and I've been kind of just picking away at it for the last few years and wondering if it was really even
viable. It sounds like to me, instead of, you should make like 100 hours of footage. And,
hours of footage?
100 hours of footage.
Well, he only has
40
to play
with. Archive or something.
I guess he could just videotape you for the other 60.
I mean, I'm trying to give you encouragement.
Yeah,
I think all of us would like to see Michael Jackson on video.
Absolutely. I mean,
so are you trying to put together just one little tight movie, or because I've never even seen the series. I know it's online, but I haven't seen the series, the Beer Hunter series. So.
Yeah, and a lot of people haven't, and you know, you see, I got to be honest, I mean, some of the footage I have with Michael, he's suffering from Parkinson's, he's tired, it's dark, it was just myself filming, I didn't have really a light crew or a sound crew or anything, and we're shooting totally off the cuff, kind of run and gun stuff, so some of it's better than other stuff, and so I really want to try to incorporate some of the original series so you can see Michael, he was in his, you know, in his prime when he shot the Beer Hunter. And so it would be nice for people that don't know. I mean, I could put together a little movie right now with what I have, and for like hardcore fans who really want to see it. But I think to get a bigger picture of Michael, and for people who might not know who he was or know how much, how important he was, can really see him, you know, when he was younger, and then see him now. And
well, yeah, John, I mean, when I was starting out in the 90s, I mean, I had one of his original books, you know, it was like the Atlas, Beer Atlas of the World, mm-hmm. or something. What was the title of that book, Chris? It was like the Beer Atlas of the World. World Guide to Beer. And at the time, you know, it covered many countries, and the American section was a little weak then. But I always felt like I could refer to the key areas. You know, Germany was amazing. You know, Belgium was amazing. Sean, did you ever read any of the old Michael Jackson books?
Sure. I mean, I've got some on my shelf. But I think, with John, what I think it's important for me, I mean, some of the, I've just been in craft beer for about 10 years, and I've never seen a Beer Hunter episode. So everything that you've been talking about, and also having these sort of behind-the-scenes interviews, as gritty as they are, I mean, it's probably as gritty as some of the beer that you guys enjoyed while you were filming them too. And I think that for the audience, I mean, that you're looking for, it's us, you know, it's the people that,
yeah.
And it's a growing audience where, you know, we're going through different generation swing where people now are ordering craft first. And I think that we need to know the history, you know, right. I mean, this is great.
No, I started writing just as Michael passed, actually, and I don't think even I had a true appreciation of what he did for the industry. And if you consider just how much craft beer has exploded since then, I don't know how many people in the industry understand just what he did for craft beer, you know, worldwide. And I mean, in the United States especially. I mean, one thing that I do remember of him from craft beer was there was this one appearance I remember on Conan O'Brien's show, which really appealed to a younger audience, and it was quite hilarious, and you know, they were doing a back and forth that was really memorable.
Michael Jackson was on Conan O'Brien?
Yeah, he was.
two appearances on there, actually.
Yeah. So
I see that it was.
I think one of them is on YouTube. I might still be on.
No, I want to see it in his movie.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah,
John. So John, listen. You got to get this movie going, and you at least got to do some rough cuts because we want to see it. How about that?
Yeah, well, there's rough. I've got all kinds of clips on YouTube and on our website. Most, if you go to Beer Hunter Movie on YouTube, I've got a bunch of stuff posted up there. New footage, old footage, and there's some vintage stuff in there. And it, you know, he just was such a great. And on top of, you know, celebrating how much of an influence he had, he was just an amazing person. I mean, he could talk about almost any subject you could imagine. So just a really interesting guy and a really, really great guy to work with. So, you know, it's kind of labor of love, and it's taken a little longer than I wanted, but I think he, you know, he deserves a fitting tribute, and
Let's make a toast to Michael Jackson. What we'll do is what I see on some of the videos you've featured, we're going to put the glass to our nose, and we're going to sniff our beer, because he always had this picture of him sniffing beer first, which is how I like to drink beer, too. And he's very inspiring. So a lot of good guys like Dan Shelton from Shelton Brothers, you know, they were close with him, and he definitely helped. They say he saved beer, and I believe that. You know, I think that craft, a lot of the styles were probably due to die out without someone like him.
Yeah, the younger generation needs to know why.
Yeah, and he gave beer such a great voice. I mean, talk about a spokesman. In the early years of the craft brewing renaissance, not even a renaissance. I mean, it's a whole new age now. I mean, his voice, he was so articulate and so, you know, witty and so learned. He set a course of vocabulary and a respect for beer that very other few people, if anyone, could really have done. And so, you know, he just put it on a course on par with wine, but with all the personality that he embodied. It was just a great start to this movement, and had a lot to do with a lot of its popularity right now. So you got to see some of the old Beer Hunter stuff. It's great.
So, John, again, what's the best way to see what you're working on? Is it on Facebook or is it a website?
BeerHunterMovie.com?
BeerHunterMovie.com is our website, but really we've got and we have some videos. We've got a YouTube plug-in on the website, but you can go right to YouTube and look for Beer Hunter Movie. We've got a Facebook page, and I actually end up posting lots of little bits and pieces on our Facebook page, Beer Hunter Movie as well, that doesn't make it onto YouTube. And so between those two things, you can see all kinds of little snippets. And there's also original Beer Hunter Movie episodes online. It's not great quality, but a lot of it's subtitled in Dutch.
All right.
But you can see it on there and get a sense of it, so. And
John,
hopefully, if we can do this, I finally found, I mean, for 3 years I've been trying to figure out who owns the original series. I finally tracked down a license holder, and if we could raise the money to do this, and this might even be another Kickstarter thing, but to license the entire series and re-release it, remaster it digitally on a DVD, and release that with some of my footage would be phenomenal if we could do that, but that's still...
Okay, John, thank you, man, so much. And well, let's stay in touch, and we'll have you on again and track your progress. So again, Beer Hunter Movie on all these social media platforms. Just Google it and check it out. But we're going to take another short break, and we'll be back and talk more with our guests on Beer Sessions Radio.
Life takes its toll. Knock you down, hit you straight on your knees. The dollars showed there ain't no pretty pennies. Invested all I had, every cent in both you and me. Time is tethered.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio at the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, there's a big party coming up on Sunday, September 9th. It's members only. If you go to heritageradionetwork.org, you can join and become a member, and you can come to our party. And one of our guys, Clay Gordon, who's going to have a new show here on Heritage Radio Network tomorrow, is going to be there serving chocolate. Clay, how are you?
I'm doing just fine, Jimmy. It's great to be
here. One of the best shows we ever had on Beer Sessions Radio was you and Garrett Oliver talking about beer and chocolate pairings.
Going back and forth. It's a lot of fun. This pair and this beer and chocolate. I was listening to you before I came on, and there's a really wonderful connection between the craft beer world and the craft chocolate world. You're talking about who's responsible for cellaring the beers. Is it the brewer? Is it the distributor? You know, is it the pub owner? We have exactly the same issue with chocolate. I mean, chocolate is not known to age and improve as it grows old, but it turns out that it does change over time. There's one manufacturer in the world, Valrhona, a French company, that vintages maybe 2 or 3 years out, so now I can go buy the 2010 or 2011, but they don't keep very much of it. Maybe they keep a ton of each of three different varieties.
That sounds like a lot.
When you think about how many people there are in the world,
that
you know,
doesn't 8 billion, sound like a lot.
It doesn't sound like a lot. But, you know, it is a real question. I'm working on building this chocolate factory here right around the corner from Heritage Radio Network World Headquarters. And one of the things we're struggling with is, are we going to be vintaging? Are we going to be cellaring? Are we going to be keeping back some chocolate? And if we are, you know, where are we going to put it? I mean, because there aren't a whole lot of places to put a couple of tons of chocolate.
Let's jump to beer. So,
okay.
Sean, tell us again, you've poured for us what?
Yeah, well, we're going to be tasting some chocolate, so I'm pretty excited to compare this. So this is with the Rye Pale Ale. Mm-hmm. This is our limited edition, only available through September, basically.
From the Bronx Brewery.
From Bronx Brewery, our second beer. So you're tasting history right now. It is 25% rye. It is got Chinook in the boil, and then we dry hop it with Crystal hops. So it's 6.3% alcohol, very balanced, unfiltered rye pale ale, and I'm imagining, I don't know.
So putting together a brewery, I mean, you know, we know the Bronx Brewery guys, but they got a brewer.
Yes, well, we have Damien, and we have Chris, who's the general manager. Damien's the head brewer. Damien Brown, Chris Gallant, and then they were smart enough to hire me. So now you've got me as a sales director, and we're all partners, and we're making a go of bringing a brewery actually to the Bronx. So hopefully by next fall, you can come up to Mott Haven and step into our tasting room and watch the brewery behind us produce delicious pale ales. We're only doing pale ales.
So what are some of the things that you do as sales director? Are you going to do special events? Yeah. Are you going to do tastings?
You know me, I'm the music man. So wherever I go, I'm always doing events. I'm also selling beer. That's primarily what they want me to do.
Yeah, that isn't your title, so
you know. So that's the first thing I'm going to do.
Okay, so I have the Bronx Brewery Rye Pale Ale in my mouth,
right?
And this chocolate that Clay just gave us.
What is this?
Well, the chocolate is made by a company in Ecuador called Picari, and it's made from beans that are grown in Ecuador, and it's flavored with sea salt and also has added cocoa nibs into it. And so I was thinking about sort of the bitter note that's in the rye. I've got some other things. There's not a whole lot of herbaceousness into it. There's not a whole lot of fruitiness in it, in the rye part of it, which tends to be earthier. And so I thought, man, and this is, you know, completely off the wall because I had no idea what you were going to be serving today.
No.
Around the corner. Let's just go do some things. Just go around to the bodega around the corner, which is one of the great things about chocolate these days.
You got this at the bodega.
Well, there's a new store around the corner. I don't know if I can say the name of it, but there's a new store they've opened up. They've got a great chocolate selection. I mean,
really good.
There are a couple of stores. And so what happens is the salt is just going to accentuate the flavors of stuff. Anything you put in your mouth, and then the cocoa nib is going to take the percentage, which is already around 70%, and drop it down just a little bit more, and it's going to give you that nice earthy bottom with the roast.
Of another piece. It's really good, but all right, let's have this one.
Yeah.
Does this go with the rye?
Absolutely. You know, here the beautiful thing about the rye is it has a very sustained finish of sweetness that you get from the rye. And it lingers. Uh-huh. And then you have the Chinook has got, especially now since this was just kegged, you know, 2 weeks ago. Right. So it's pretty darn fresh. Mm-hmm. And the Crystal hop that we dry hop it with is very high alpha. It's got a acidity to it almost that like it'll slows it down, but it never stops it. Mm-hmm. Where and this just adds to the sustain. It's like a not a wah wah pedal to an electric fiddle,
right?
But it's something very very similar. And then the cocoa nibs also. Mm-hmm. They work with the hops.
And what's interesting, I think, a little bit is the way just adding a slight touch of sweetness, the slight bit of sugar in here, combines with the caramelized sugar that are in the beers and just goes,
oh yeah,
whoa. You know, and this is, you know, I did this a couple of weeks ago. Just walked in. There were 14 beers on the menu. I had 5 chocolates in my bag, and just, you know, what do you go do? You know, and how do you go figure it out? And you end up drinking a lot of beer, and you end up eating a lot of chocolate. You know,
I want to get to know you. You
know,
it's a
trial and error kind of thing, is it? Or, well, you know, or you have some idea, obviously, when you see, you know, what kind of beers are on the menu. Right?
Well, if I've tasted it before, absolutely yes. I mean, I can say, oh, there's a saison. I just sort of generally know what a saison might be, but there's a saison which is aged in a whiskey barrel. You know, what's that going to do to it? Right?
That doesn't sound very good.
Actually, it was fabulous.
Really?
No, it was absolutely fabulous. But trying to figure out how to get a chocolate. I mean, but you've got some beers like with pumpkin flavors in it, a creme brulee beer. You've got a banana bread beer. You've got all these interesting kinds of beers, which, you know, which interestingly lend themselves to milk chocolate. Mm-hmm. You get all the caramelized flavors in the milk chocolate, and if you've got those kinds of beers, it's an easy one. If you've got a yeasty, bready beer.
Right.
Again, those sort of rich caramelized flavors go in. So you've got a general idea, but every once in a while you might have something which has got, oh, you know, it's got over the top, you know, butter flavor in it. You know, what are you going to go do with that? Or you just don't have a chocolate. I mean, I've got a chocolate I brought with me. It's got lemongrass in it.
Ooh.
So if you have anything which has got, you know, fruit forward in terms of, you know, herbaceous citrus. If you got something with a real citrusy hop in it, this lemongrass.
Here are the things that I was my go-to beer and food pairings. There's beer and chocolate today. There's beer and bacon. Oh. There's beer and cheese. There's beer and oysters. Mm-hmm. What are any of your other go-to beer and food pairings?
Well, bacon. Again, I have to reiterate this. Bacon and beer couldn't be any happier. But with chocolate, just to go a little bit off topic and stay on topic with chocolate, when as a just sort of an amateur taster, right, when I want to extend my experience at home, or when I'm hosting parties at home, I want to think of like ways that I can make the dinner a little bit more interesting, and I've tried pairing chocolate with beer. I've always stayed safe and paired it with like stouts,
right.
Russian Imperial stouts, barley wines, high ABV beers, things that have like a lot of complexity. Some of them that have been aged, and then I'll pair that with, I don't know diddly about chocolate other than I like dark chocolate.
Right.
And I like sea salt, so you've made a friend for life, by the way, on that first pairing. So what I want to know is sort of like an amateur, like person that's going to pair something, like how do you even come up with the process of pairing like a regular pale ale with a milk chocolate? I mean,
a lot of it is just experience.
Yeah.
I mean, I've learned that the thing that separates somebody who's really good at what they do in terms of tasting and pairing and putting things together, it's not so much that they're super tasters, it's just that they have really good taste memory. Oh, I know what this tastes like. Oh, I can imagine these. And that's true of chefs. I mean, that's a great chef is somebody who's got a great, certainly impeccable technical skills. But it's really all about, I know what this taste is. I can imagine those two tastes together. I can imagine these two textures going together. And that's just it. It's you have to drink a lot. You have to have a, which sounds like an awful
thing. Darn.
But another thing to do, Jimmy mentioned that he says, you know, I like beer and chocolate. I like beer and bacon. I like beer and cheese. And so one of the first things I did, one of my earliest combinations was, well, I know chocolate and strawberries go together, and I know that balsamic vinegar and strawberries go together, and I know that strawberries and black pepper go together.
Mm-hmm.
So let me do something with balsamic vinegar, chocolate, and black pepper with strawberries. And so that's a real interesting, that's an easy way to go about doing it, is that I have things that I know work individually. Can I put them in combination and make them work? And, you know, this weekend is an example at Pig Island.
Okay.
Fabulous, successful.
Oh, yeah.
This weekend, I brought out I think what many people think to be one of their favorite things that I do, which is I was asked to do chocolate and bacon a couple of years ago, and I said, I don't like...
Did you bring any with you? Did anything survive from Pig Island?
Let's crack the other chocolate.
You know, I really want to try the lemongrass, and okay. I think I'm the only one who has any of this beer left, but I brought...
I drank it.
Sean drank it all because he liked it so
it's
much,
phenomenal.
But I brought a beer from my home state of Rhode Island, Flying Jenny Pale Ale from a brewery called Grace Sale. Wow.
You hear that sound?
That was quite a pop.
But it's true. Clay, actually, his I call it your chocolate bacon fondue.
That's what it is.
Oh, that's wow. Pretty awesome.
But what I do...
Chocolate bacon fondue.
Well, yeah, but what you do is what are cream and butter, but emulsions of fat and water?
Yeah.
And if you deconstruct them...
Oh, I'm in. You said right. The three things I love most.
So what I do is I make a chocolate fondue, but instead of using cream and butter, I use bacon fat and beer, and then I dip cooked chocolate into the chocolate... Or cooked bacon into the chocolate fondue.
And are you making that Sunday for the Heritage Radio Network party?
No, I'm not. I'm not making that Sunday for the Heritage Radio Network party. But what we are offering as part of the VIP ticket package is we're hosting the reception in the Chocolate Factory, which I'm helping build, which is right next door to Heritage Foods and right around the corner from Roberta's and the Heritage Radio Network studios. We're hosting the VIP session.
Yeah.
Oh, we're reaching. And... then we're going to be doing a factory tour and a chocolate tasting as a part of the package. So people will be able to get to see what it is that we're doing, which is a lot
awesome.
Of fun.
And I'm really happy that your show's starting tomorrow on Heritage Radio Network. All right, Sean, what's the beer you pour? Because this is really good.
Well, you know, Chris O'Leary brought this, so I can't take any of the credit for it. All I can do is read the label. And it's Rising Tide Brewing Company. The beer is called Black Ale.
Atlantis Black Ale. Yeah, I had these guys up at the Portland Brew Fest this weekend up in Portland, Maine. And this brewery is really going places. They're doing their first release outside of Maine in Massachusetts this week, actually. They're going to start to distribute their beer in the Boston area. So they're just getting off the ground. And
smoky.
Chris,
it's very
Portland,
smoky.
Portland Brew Fest. Okay, Portland, Maine.
Yep.
We know Allagash. We know Maine Beer Company.
Yeah.
Who else was there?
There were quite a few. So Bunker Brewing, which I mentioned earlier in the show. Nice little nano brewery there. These guys, Rising Tide, Baxter Brewing out of Lewiston, Maine. They can all their beers. Had a really fantastic American Amber. They do West Coast styles, which is actually hard to find in Maine because, you know, the big players in Maine are like Shipyard and Geary's and Allagash, which do, you know, English and Belgian styles of beer. So to get an American style beer was actually hard to do for a while in Maine. And they're really doing it. Rising Tide starting to do it. You know, Bunker did the Pilsner. There's a couple of great brew pubs in Maine too. Obviously, Gritty McDuff's. They were there, as was Run of the Mill in Saco, Maine, and their sister brew pub, which is the Liberal Cup in Hallowell, Maine. Really standout breweries from the state of Maine, and there were other New England breweries there. White Birch from Hooksett, New Hampshire, was there. So was Tuckerman's out of New Hampshire. There were some really, really
Portland Brew Fest.
Yeah, this is only their second year doing it, and you know, it just happened to be in Portland, Maine for Labor Day weekend, so I can't, you know,
sounds like
I can't
a place
say
that
no.
I wish I was.
Yeah. I can't say no to just happening to be in.
I'm so glad you said Portland, Maine, and not Portland, Oregon.
Why Portland? Oregon?
Well, there's so much about Portland, Oregon, but I think Portland, Maine's got a great scene too.
They
have a great beer and food scene. I mean, the food scene there is just unbelievable. They have so many really talented chefs that are doing amazing things, and they have great beer to pair it with too.
All right, and Clay, what's the last chocolate you gave us?
Well, the last chocolate is from the same company, Picari, but this is the chocolate with lemongrass in it. Okay, and so I tasted the beer.
Smoky,
and
too. The beer is smoky.
The beer is smoky.
The sweetness of the lemongrass comes in the finish.
It does. It is really quite a remarkable combination, not one that I would normally think of. And I had brought a chocolate with cocoa nibs and chili peppers, and I decided not to give it to you because if I gave you the chili peppers, it would just blow your taste buds for the rest of the show, and you wouldn't be able to taste really anything.
How about over dinner? Can we have that then?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But it's also interesting to try this same beer with the chili pepper chocolate, because it provides, I mean, the way I've learned to do this is you have one beer and you have two or three different chocolates, and then you understand how the chocolate changes and the beer changes with doing things. Or what you do is you have one chocolate or two or three different beers, and if you, because we're really good at understanding how to compare and contrast things, not to taste something, you really have to be trained to go, you know, what is that that I'm tasting in it, and which requires this taste memory that I'm talking about it. But you can say, this is sweeter, this is fruitier, this is more bitter, this has got some citrus in here. I mean, I tasted a beer recently, I forget which one it was, but the hops had the overtone of passion fruit, and I've never had passion fruit overtones in a beer. And if it wasn't for the fact that passion fruit is one of my favorite flavors in chocolate, I never would have said, oh, that's what that flavor is. It took me a while because I've never had that flavor in beer before.
Sounds like Citra and Simcoe mixed together.
Or something like that. Yeah, no, but you know, it's just that sometimes you get this flavor, it's immediately obvious, right? But the context is so different, you don't trust yourself. Is that really what I'm tasting?
Well, I'll tell you this. We're going to continue this conversation. I have a feeling that Clay Gordon on his new chocolate show, also on Heritage Radio Network, will be having many beer guests on as well. You're on. We're going to take a cut here. So, Sean, what's going on this Saturday? Where will you be pouring Bronx Brewery?
I think there's only one place in the world that anybody this weekend should be, and that's the Food Karma Rockaway Beach Blast from 12 to 5. That's
so
where
the
I'm
Beer
be.
Sessions Radio, the Barrels and Kegs event at Rockaway Beach. That's the official title.
Well, that's even better. You always say it better.
I know, there's so many things. But there'll be 20 breweries, including Bronx Brewery, Bronx Greenport Brewery. Harbor, Barrier, Wandering Star, and the Rockaway Brewing Company. And Chris, any special events that's on your list at Brew York, New York, that we should know about before we sign up?
We're just plugging away, you know, giving everyone the opportunity to attend these beer events. I mean, we're going to try to get over to Barrels and Kegs this weekend too. It's a really great event, and there's so much coming up in September and October in terms of beer events, and I just
there are a couple on the top of your list.
There's, I mean, Brooklyn Pour this year from Village Voice. They're really trying to perfect what they did. They executed very well last year. I think it's going to be an even better event this year. Really looking forward to that. And then our friend Josh Bernstein is doing his third anniversary homebrew tour event with lots of homebrew at a bar in Bushwick that's escaping my mind right now. It'll be on my site. So
go to BrewYork.com.
There's two other events that really should be on Brew York, New York. September 15th, Freaktoberfest.
Oh, of course.
Come on, baby. I mean, how could you see, not want to go? September 15th, 12 to 5.
I'm going to be out of town that day, so.
But we're not.
Well, exactly.
We're not. And then the most important one is actually, it's a Sunday. You know, it's a day of rest for a lot of people, but it's our one-year anniversary on September 30th.
Awesome.
We'll be at the Blind Tiger, and we're going to be releasing for the first time. We only have 30 cases of this, so Jimmy, your seller, is calling.
Jimmy's going to hoard it again.
We have a Zinfandel from Brooklyn Winery that we've been aging our Bronx Pale Ale in. Ooh. So we're bottling that, and it'll be available for the first time on our one-year anniversary at 3 o'clock on September 30th at the Blind Tiger. We'll have the Rye Pale Ale on draft, the Bronx Pale Ale, and the Bronx Pale Ale on Firkin.
Sounds good. So you can find out. Go to Brew York, New York for more information, goodbeerseal.com. And I will be serving more of the Bronx Brewery Rye Pale Ale at Jimmy's.
And we thank you for that.
All right. So again, go to goodbrewseal.com, find out more. And this coming weekend, it's Barrels and Kegs, a very cool event. It's the send-off for New York Craft Beer Week. You may not know this, but New York Craft Beer Week is moving to February. And there's a lot more information you can learn about. And stay tuned on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Thanks to our sponsors at greatbrewers.com, have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. You can find Beer Sessions Radio on our Facebook page, Beer Sessions Radio. And thanks to Sean and John for joining me here tonight with Clay and our call-in guest from Beer Hunter, the movie.
John.
All right. And I'm Jimmy Carboni. And our producers, Jack Inslee, Brie O'Connor, and our engineer, Joe Galarraga. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. Chris, we forgot you. Sorry, man.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.